Today is Thursday. It is March 8th, 2018. It's 11:13 in the morning. Hi, I'm John Williams. This is the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio. Listen to my radio show, too, please. I'm on weekdays on WGN Radio from 1 to 3 and Saturday mornings from 10 a.m. till noon.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune and creator of the comic strip Prickly City and co-host of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
I'm Eric Zorn, the guardedly optimistic columnist from the Tribune. I run Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
Can I just say, I think I've got a lot going on too, but my introductions are always the shortest.
Well, I hate to bite on Eric's dangling fruit, but I mean, why guardedly optimistic here, my friend?
I'm thinking that maybe this Stormy Daniels thing is going to bring Trump even lower.
Why? He's already been forgiven by Franklin Graham.
Yeah, this is the greatest mulligan in the history of trysts. I mean, my goodness.
Nope. Does anybody doubt? I mean, I don't know, nobody around this table doubts that he had an affair with a porn star, but is anybody in the public actually doubt it?
How does a guy who's known as a germaphobe, right, have an affair with a porn
star?
That's
a great question.
I don't get that at all.
Doesn't seem sanitary, does it?
Porn star. CNN cannot get enough of this story. Depending on when you listen to this podcast, I'll just tell you what it was like in the moment that I looked at it today. I looked at CNN and the whole left column, pictures. You know, what it does is it gives news organizations a chance to run a lot of pictures of a porn star. But then there's all sorts of reporting and commentary. Fox News, not one single story, picture, video, commentary.
Is that
scroll
right?
Down, scroll down, scroll down, couldn't find it. I typed in on their search bar, Stormy, and then Fox News. Eventually had a story from the previous day. Later this day, Thursday the 8th of March, they put up another story or two. But they have been as distanced from it as I think CNN has been in love with it. And guys, of the two, I think that Fox News has the better perspective.
It's an abuse of campaign. I mean, he could easily have broken campaign finance laws.
Well, he could have done a lot of things. First of all, look at this. He's having an affair with a porn star just weeks after his third wife gave birth to his fifth child.
And he's paying hush money during the campaign to the porn star.
He didn't pay anything. His attorney paid the money.
Well, they didn't claim. Isn't this interesting that he didn't claim that as a political contribution?
Well, maybe the point. That's the kind of the
point.
That's
what you're
my
saying.
Idea is that he should come out and have a news conference and say, yeah, okay, I banged a porn star. Wouldn't, you know,
who amongst us?
Who amongst us would? I'm an alpha male.
Cast the first beta.
I didn't shoot anybody in the middle of Fifth Avenue. But,
right.
But,
he's always got that. Right. He's going to do that.
This is between me and Melania. None of your business. Let's get back to my ill-advised trade war.
So play it out for me, Eric. Your best case scenario.
My best case scenario is that he's gone.
How does that happen?
I've been weighing this for a while because I think Mike Pence is not really a trade up for most people on my with my political views, but the way Trump enacted this or proposes to enact this trade war, which, you know, one of the things that we worry about is that he's so impulsive, so narcissistic, so shallow that he's going to start a nuclear war or start a major land war somewhere because he doesn't have any impulse control. He has no sense of perspective, very little sense of history. I mean, he's a dangerous man in that regard. No matter what you think of his politics on certain issues, I think he's a dangerous person to be president, and these are potentially dangerous times. This trade war is a little signal, a little reminder to us of what a rash, impulsive, shallow person can do as president. And I don't, for all of Mike Pence's faults, he's not rash and impulsive.
It's interesting you say then, so his danger doesn't come from ambition. A lot of times the danger from strongmen comes from their great ambition. You're saying that's not it in this case. It's his ignorance almost.
Well, I don't think ignorance and ambition are mutually exclusive.
No, but he doesn't seem to be particularly ambitious.
He wants to be president for life. Didn't he make a little quip about that last
week? I still don't see how all of that, Eric, what does that have to do with Stormy Daniels?
Well, because if there's a violation of law, if there's a violation of campaign finance law.
Boy, that would be ironic. All the stuff that's happened.
What brought down Bill Clinton was Paula Jones, right?
Say it again. Well, yeah, it reminds me of, what was it, Al Capone, who was busted not for killing people, but for not paying taxes.
If there's sexts and there are like dick pics in the stuff that Stormy Daniels has, that could actually do it. I mean, it's brought down everybody else, right? It brought down Anthony Weiner. something much milder brought down Gary Hart.
Yeah, but what do you mean milder? He has a picture of his mistress sitting on his lap on the Monkey Business. I mean, Gary Hart.
Gary Hart.
So, but you're referring to the lawyer for Stormy Daniels, Ms. Daniels, was on the Today Show this week saying that they had pictures. But so then people are making the jump that they're
sexts of
graphic
sort.
Pictures, which may not be the case.
I don't think this kills this guy. I really don't think
don't
that's either. The
no,
thing
no,
that
no,
does
either.
It. I think what does it is the Russia collusion investigation by Mueller continues to go apace. I think that's the one that does it. If something will get him.
But, John, it's not a small matter that the sitting president is accused of paying hush money to a porn star and,
why?
You know, in the days before the election.
Why does it matter?
Why does it matter? Yeah. Because he's the
you
president.
You think the way the election?
He's paying hush money to someone.
It's not illegal. It's not illegal to give money to somebody to be quiet about something.
The whole question about the Russia investigation or whatever is that if someone has something on him to hold over him and to blackmail him, here's evidence that he pays hush money to a porn star. That's okay. Not a little thing.
I didn't
thing.
Vote for him either, Steve. All I'm saying is today...
I didn't say I didn't vote for him.
He's the president. All I'm saying is today he's the president. And I know we'll all enjoy the embarrassment and the, you know, the nuttiness of this. It's a great soap opera at the highest level. But I cannot see how it will do what Eric wants, usher him out of office, unless the campaign finance thing happens and that he gets what and then what happens, Eric? He gets impeached because of that?
He could be, yeah. I mean, you never know where Mueller's going with this, but Scott's right. I mean, he's going on there's the obstruction of justice angle, there's the Russian collusion angle, and now there's this abuse of campaign finance laws angle. More realistically, he and the party are so weakened that the Democrats take over the Senate and or the House in the fall, and then Trump is just stymied.
Well, to Eric's point, did you see what happened in Texas this week with the vote? The two times as many Democrats came out to vote this time as came out in 2016.
You know, I never go here, but you're right. Imagine if this were Barack Obama, who was paying hush money to a porn star to keep quiet about an affair he had 4 months after
his
fifth child.
Evangelicals are the ones who are defending him.
I know.
Fox News would talk about nothing else. They would preempt all commercials.
I know. That's why I bring up the Fox thing, too, by the way. I do think it's interesting to see how the two camps are following this.
The hypocrisy of the religious right is, I think they've outdone themselves.
That's one of the
case.
Great revelations.
Yeah. They really have.
If I understand, their position is we're giving him the mulligan, Scott, because he's executing our policies.
Who else have they given mulligans to?
I don't know, but they...
I mean, is the mulligan something new to them?
I didn't know you could get mulligans.
I don't... Right. I'm a regular churchgoer, and I don't remember them mentioning that once.
The mulligan?
Yeah.
Well, the gospel
the
according to mulligan?
Well, you're a Catholic.
Isn't that what confession is?
Like, that's exactly our mulligan.
To get your mulligans.
But it has to be of the heart.
Yes, and you have to actually ask for it. Don't forget, these evangelicals, Franklin Graham being among them, forgave Trump for something Trump never asked forgiveness
that's
for.
That's an excellent point, because that's a tenet, right, of Christianity, especially conservative Christians, that you are flawed and that you are in need of redemption. And the president says he doesn't bother to ask for forgiveness because he doesn't want to bother God with it or something
He was asked in an interview during the campaign, have you ever asked God for forgiveness?
Yeah.
Have you ever asked God for forgiveness? I'm not sure I have. I just go and try and do a better job from there. I don't think so. I think if I do something wrong, I think I just try and make it right. I don't bring God into that picture.
I do that.
So how people can defend him, it's just hard to understand.
It does take me back, though, to the late 90s and what Democrats were saying and doing and thinking about Bill Clinton at the time, which was, you know, there was very little question. I don't think anybody had any doubt about his affairs. And certainly, you know, as the evidence mounted up, even he had to admit it. But there was a sense like, well, do we want Bill Clinton to – would we rather replace Bill Clinton with a Democrat?
Is it removable?
With a Republican? No. But, I think that they – Clinton probably should have resigned. It would have probably been better for the Democratic Party, for him in 1998 to have stepped down and let Al Gore take over. I think it would have been better. And, you know, I don't think I saw that at the time. I think I was much more defensive position at the
Absolutely.
Time.
Yeah, so, I think we all were. But I also think we had...
All of us.
What do you mean?
Oh, I wasn't. The man committed perjury. He should have been removed from office.
Yeah, right. Well, the Senate wasn't going to convict him on that.
They didn't.
But I think what he also had going for him, different than in this case, is that he was brilliant. He was rational. He made bad choices in his personal life. But nobody worried that he was going to throw up a trade tariff or throw up a nuclear weapon. in this case, Eric, I mean, I hear your point. I think Donald Trump will always be a dangerous president. I think it would be at least ironic and probably not realistic to hope that this is the cat that skins him. If that's such a phrase, the cat that skins him. If this is the thing that
I think one
wow, that's one mean
right.
cat.
Skin the cat. I think that one skins the cat right. does not skin him.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things going on in Chicago. What local gubernatorial or city of Chicago story is most interesting to you guys right now?
Can we talk about city key card? Because that's
I'm all over that.
Yeah, I saw that. You know, people who dismiss it, saying that people are losing their head over this. The Ives came out and an
if I may, Scott, City Key is a card.
Thank you.
City of Chicago is issuing now. It's in its sort of very early stages, but everybody will have access to it. But it's designed for people who don't have typical identification, driver's licenses, etc. That means the homeless. That means the elderly. That means legal immigrants, and it also means illegal immigrants will now have a form of identification. It'll be used at libraries. You can use it as your venture card, your transportation card. It has some identifying information on there. And so this is a way that people who are down on their luck, say recently released felons, will be able to maybe get jobs, have some sort of identification to hand somebody. Okay, go.
Well, and that's ostensibly what they're pitching it as, but there is a darker element to it, as voiced by Chicago City Clerk Anna Valencia, who said you can use it to register to vote, and you can even to vote. Well,
you can, and that is true.
That is true as far as that goes. However, is there an ability to abuse this? And it smacks of that, given the city's history. It certainly smacks of something more sinister.
What? Are you suggesting?
Voter fraud? Yes.
And do you think by design? Because that's what Jeannie Ives has said. She's running for governor.
Well,
she said that,
Jeannie has said a lot of things.
Do you think
she's saying that they came up with the program in order to help the Democrats cheat at the ballot box?
Essentially.
Yeah.
I can see where, and I don't know a lot about this, but if you guys have described it fairly, I'm sure you have.
Yeah, John did a good job.
I can see where that could be a problem that needs to be addressed, but I don't think that means they set it up to. Well,
it's not. I mean, the thing is, there are a number of different kinds of ID that you can use to register to vote, and including, I believe, not having any ID at all, that you can register to vote. So it's not like this is something, you know, that an illegal immigrant couldn't have obtained other forms of ID that are. I think you can use like utility bills and so on.
You need two forms of ID, one of which has to have your address. Your utility bill will do that.
So then this is a moot point.
Exactly. Oh, totally it is. So, that is, if there's a problem with using the city key as a vote registration card, then the whole system is flawed, right? Because
right.
other things, like Eric is describing, are also used.
And of course, this also gives a chance to remind everyone who is not eligible to register to vote, if they do, it's a felony, and it's you can be deported for it.
I mean, right. You're literally signing a piece of paper saying, here's who I am, here's where I am, maybe, and I'm now putting my signature on there, and now I'm going to go vote.
And these are,
many illegal aliens are going to do
well,
that?
Even ineligible, and people who are not yet citizens who can't vote. It is a crime that can get you kicked out of the country. I don't think you're going to see significant numbers of people trying to use this new form of ID to vote. You know, I think this whole issue that Jeannie Ives is raising is a smokescreen for just sort of an anti-immigration.
What do you think, Scott?
Well, she's running on an anti-immigration platform.
That's true.
There's no question.
That is her only platform.
But I'm always concerned about things like this. And I think that, again, given the history of the city, given the rather, using machinations to get votes, to manufacture votes that maybe shouldn't have been cast, to say that, well, you know, if you sign this thing, you're being illegal. Well, you're an illegal immigrant if a ward boss, if someone who is particularly devious decides to.
But, Scott, if you can already do it, short of.
But you have to do it. But this ID is particularly easy to get.
This kind of in-person, one-on-one voter fraud is really rare. It's just not that big an issue. And we make a big deal about it, but it really, statistically, every time I've tried to study it, they find that it's an insignificant problem.
It takes so much work to sway
it. It's such a risk for one vote, really?
I'd say not insignificant. I think voter fraud is not insignificant, even if it's a minor infraction. It's still significant because it imbues the
in principle.
Yeah, well, in principle, and often, sometimes in fact. I mean, we have this coming from the South. We had massive amounts of it down there.
It is a very small problem because it's a huge risk for such a little reward, one vote.
How much are you going to pay me to do that? Or am I so motivated for my alderman or the mayor that I'm going to vote twice? I mean, no, we can't get people to vote, period, let alone to vote illegally.
If I can speak in defense of Jeannie Ives,
yeah,
and that ad that Rauner's running against her that makes her look like she's a friend of Mike Madigan.
Oh my God.
He's picking on Mike Madigan again. He's picking on Mike Madigan again.
Has there ever been an ad, you guys tell me, that takes comments more out of context than that ad that he's using against her?
PolitiFact here gave it a pants on fire.
It's a terrible ad.
Jeannie Ives, the great friend of Mike Madigan, and she says something like, oh, the powerful speaker. And then she says, well, the Constitution says you might not be. It makes it sound like she's defending. It doesn't even make it sound like she's defending it. It tries to make it sound like she's defending or acquiescing to Madigan.
Picking on Mike Madigan.
And it's just completely out of context.
The reason she said that was at a forum, she said.
Actually, from the debate at the Tribune.
It was from the debate at the Tribune, and the context is that she's talking about how Rauner, and I agree with her on this completely, which is that Rauner has spent his first 3.5 years obsessed with this white whale, Mike Madigan, you know, calling him a crook, you know, insulting him.
Now we're going to call Mike Madigan a crook. Now we're going to call Mike Madigan a crook.
Thinking that this is the way he's going to work his will, and he's 0 for 44 in his turnaround agenda because he doesn't know how to play nice. He doesn't know how to negotiate. He's really bad at being governor. He's really good at driving down Mike Madigan's poll numbers, but that's not moving our state along. So when you've got this situation where he's just griping about Madigan, that's what she's talking about, which is you're not getting anything done because you don't know how to work with people.
Well, in fact, just before she said that, Governor Rauner called Madigan a crook.
And so then they take those words.
Yeah.
Rauner takes those words and makes it try to sound, but it doesn't even sound like she's defending Madigan. If you listen to it closely, maybe the problem is no one listens to anything closely, but it's laughable. Well, it's a laughable ad.
You need legislator approval to repeal that, obviously, so you have to have them decide to do that, to repeal it, right? I can't guarantee what the legislator is going to send me in a bill.
Jeannie Ives, guaranteed to defend and defer to Mike Madigan.
And the worst part about it, another bad part about it, I don't know if it's the worst, is she claims that he's taken some money from a union group out of
Shady
the
Shady unions.
Southern, well, unions that have also given money to Mike Madigan. So basically saying, well, and they gave her like $7,000 or something like that. I don't have the number in front of me.
You have to do the voice, though.
Not a ton.
Jeannie Ives.
Another Madigan lackey.
In a world.
And other prominent Republicans say have taken more money than that from the same union group. And the fact is that, you know, this amount of money is really small compared to the amount of money that is going on in this campaign. And the idea that because she was supported by this union, that she's a lackey for Madigan, it is offensively dishonest.
Well, what's an ad that you like? Are any of you persuaded by an ad? You go, wow, I think that's a good guy or a good gal, and I appreciate it.
The Kwame
Raoul,
yeah. I think his ad is terrific because he ties himself into President Obama. He looks like a statewide officer. And sounds and looks like one.
I'm Kwame Raoul. This is the work of my life, and I'm just getting started.
I'm voting for him based on that ad. I love that ad. I watch it all the time.
You know, you're worried about people getting key cards in voting, and here you're voting because you like people's commercials.
For the shallowest of reasons.
You like Dan Biss's living room
that?
I think that ad's effective.
Let's let the illegals vote, for God's sakes.
If they vote Biss, I'm on board.
The illegals aren't doing a great job of it. I mean,
if they're more sophisticated than John Williams, then we'll absolutely.
You said you think it's an effective ad. I wonder, Eric, if these are effective ads, the ones Scott and I like.
Well, I like the Dan Biss ad.
Is it effective?
I think JB ads have been effective only for no other reason than repetition and saturation.
I think the Jeannie Ives biographical ad in the Super Bowl, you know, was effective. It might have been derailed by her subsequent ads, but
no. Well, it was derailed by her previous ad. I mean, that ad came out a couple of days after.
Okay,
remember, Steve? She set that up, and then she said, "Now that I have your attention," and then she did more warm or issue or biographical pieces. But I think the template was set for her. She's very toxic.
I think she had set the table for herself at the Tribune Forum, where she just kicked Rauner around the room, and then after that, some of her campaign people got in her ear and said, hey, let's put out this really harsh ad that's going to appeal to the same people who voted for Alan Keyes. And that's the secret to winning this.
Both of them.
And I think that polarized. I think she had sort of, there were some things in her background that she'd said that were, certainly from my point of view, very regrettable about, you know, gay people and so on. But those were in the rearview mirror, I think, and I think she could have persuaded some of those, you know, suburban voters who are like, you know, we're reasonable people, we're not haters, but we like what she says.
Well, I can ask
you, she lost those people.
I can ask you guys, have you met any Republicans who go, yeah, Bruce Rauner, that's my guy? I haven't met one in this state yet who, especially at this stage of his governorship, that thinks that this guy has done a good job or should be reelected.
No.
So you could say the same about Mike Madigan in many ways.
Yeah, could. And wasn't there was a poll out just recently that had the popularity numbers for these guys? And all of them are in the same. Madigan, we're talking about Trump, Rauner and Madigan, their disapproval numbers are in the 60s.
Yeah, Rauner is liked less than Trump in Illinois.
Yes, but Madigan is the worst. Madigan's like 68% disapproval. I mean, he's just.
What that must be like. Well, I wonder what that's like for the Madigans.
You have kids?
I know. If my dad...
You've had negative numbers.
Or my kids... really, I mean, I just wonder what that's like every day, knowing that if you turn on any kind of social media or electronic media, you will be getting blistered. And if you talk to people on the street and say, hi, I'm Mike Madigan, or I'm Joe Madigan, Mike's my uncle, life will be very unpleasant for you in the state of Illinois, where you live, where you serve.
And I got to say, part of that is on Madigan himself. Madigan is not good at defending himself. He doesn't go on television. He doesn't get interviews. He doesn't have people who speak up for him who say, like, look, yes, these things have happened, but here's what I have done for you. Here's why it's good that I've been.
He's the Bill Belichick of politics without the Super Bowl rings.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a great analogy.
Unless
steal that.
Take it, baby. That's all yours.
But the Super Bowl rings are he's still the coach.
Yeah, he still wins the elections.
Yeah. And people are talking on social media about how the Me Too stuff about his campaign staff and how he seems to have turned a blind eye to sexual harassment and his staff is going to take him down. No.
but you have seen him really move on that. I mean, that has prompted movement from a guy who doesn't move very fast.
It's prompted speech.
I've said this before. He's a millstone around the neck of Democratic candidates throughout the state, and they're all going to be tied to him, and it's going to drive voters away. Madigan could lose the House, probably not in a Democratic year, but Madigan's the stone of Madigan around the neck of whoever the Democratic gubernatorial nominee is, and Rauner will string that around even Chris Kennedy if Kennedy wins.
Who did the Tribune endorse for governor?
For governor, Chris Kennedy on the Democratic side and Rauner on the Republican side.
Yeah, Chris Kennedy. That's surprising to me.
Well, you know, I mean, I thought
it was your call, but I was surprised.
Well, it wasn't my call. I had nothing to do with it, and Kristen's not here to explain or to go over the endorsement. But I think it was almost sort of a...
Hello, I was there.
Oh,
I'm on the board.
Oh, that's right. Were you on the meeting?
Hence the thing, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, so can you... Do you want
I can't talk about it.
I know you can't.
Neither could Kristen. But you read the editorial. You know what? It was a compromise.
Tony Preckwinkle, and is it Bob Fioretti?
Mm-hmm.
He is running for county board.
Cook County Board president.
President. And Tony Preckwinkle has that. So the two of them were debating on Channel 11 this week. And part of the debate that Phil Ponce was overseeing was over Joe Berrios. And evidently, Tony Preckwinkle is still, I don't know, is she supporting Joe Berrios?
Oh, yes. It was appalling. It was the opening question of this debate. Phil Ponce turns to Tony Preckwinkle and says, okay, let's get this out of the way.
Right.
You're supporting this guy, Joe Berrios, and all these investigations show that he's really bad at his job. Explain yourself. She gives like a 3-minute answer about nothing, about her record. She doesn't even touch Berrios.
So why do you support somebody who's run his office in a way that these reports conclude have hurt many of your constituents?
Well, first of all, I'm here to defend myself and my record. You know, when I came into office, I like to say I was following somebody who was inept, which has two outcomes. One, things are a mess. The other is the bar is pretty low. So my first challenges were try to write county government as a whole. And I began by talking about health care and what's happened in our health care system and how it's sustainable for the first time in its 180-year history.
Phil finally said, all right, I guess you don't want to answer.
He circled back to it a couple of times.
Yeah, he did.
And she just... Basically, she says, well, he got the bills out on time. I mean, you know, basically she's tied in because he's...
And then Fioretti after that says, so I don't think we should be proud of getting corrupt bills out on time.
That was a good line. That was a good line.
It really was a great comeback, and then that just sat there and they moved on. And that's really what it is, that Joe Berrios, if he's made improvements in the office, and if she inherited a dysfunctional county system, nobody's denying the fact in that debate that I saw that we are unfairly taxing homeowners and businesses in the city of Chicago. And it was just a shrug. I'm so disappointed in her because I like her. I think she's really intelligent. I think she's a real public servant. What would happen to her if she threw him under the bus? What would happen if she'd say, you know, we got to get a new county assessor?
Throws him under the bus implies that it wouldn't be his fault or responsibility, right? Which
okay,
is
well,
what we're talking about.
Just calls him out.
Doesn't yank him out from under the bus where he now right. seems to be.
The Cook County Democratic machine yeah. is still so powerful
that
she needs it. She yeah. feels she needs it. Fioretti, I don't know that he's much of a threat, but he is a former alderman. He's a known quantity here, and so maybe she sees a little bit of danger there. And so why rock the boat? I think that their thoughts are that the Berrios thing will go away. That the assessments, which I think are also frank, I think we wrote an editorial which I disagreed with, quite frankly, at the Tribune about Kennedy's assertion that these are racist, and I think they are. The assessments that rich white guys and Gold Coast people get their assessments lowered, and while black people down in the South Side and West Side don't.
Yeah,
I mean, this is it's at very least it's bigoted for economics, if not racially.
Ponce said to her, "That's your compass point. It's been a big deal for you. Why aren't you defending these people?"
And she said,
"Nothing. No answer. No good answer."
It was excruciating, actually, watching that. And as someone, I think I feel about Breckwinkle the way John does, which is I've always kind of liked her. She seems very smart. She seems calm.
Let's do our recommendations. Oh, by the way, I just want to do a quick shout out. One to Scott Stanis' editorial cartoon, which ran today, right, Scott?
Yes.
March 8th Chicago Tribune. And it shows the flowchart for the President of the United States. And all the little boxes at the bottom as it branches out are gone. and three of them are heading for the door.
Wait for me.
It's very well done.
Thank you.
And that is the case. And then Eric Zorn, when I was saying, gee whiz, the bully is using the bully pulpit for good, a podcast or two ago, I said, look at that. He's taking on the NRA. And Eric Zorn says, you watch. Somebody's going to get in his ear, and they're going to whisper something or talk to him.
They're good people.
That night, he had a meeting with the NRA, and then they said he's not for gun control. That night it happened, Eric. You predicted it 8 hours before it happened. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
All right, Steve, what is your recommendation this week?
I have been watching Babylon Berlin on Netflix. Have you watched it?
I'm watching it now.
Do you understand it?
No, but it's
I don't know either.
Is it in German?
It's in German.
And French.
And subtitled.
Oh,
and
it has subtitles.
Yeah, it's subtitles.
That's why you don't understand it.
Radio guys.
It's in German.
I'm so glad you subtitles on you guys.
But it's fascinating. It's set between the world wars. And so what you see are, and it's not really overtly political, but you see the Hitlerites sort of rising on the right, but you see the police forces fighting the communists coming in, which I studied communism quite a bit, and I didn't think of that part of pre-World War II Germany, that the communists were coming in all of that. And then it's just about how it was, in many ways, a loose, carefree society in the days before World War II. So Babylon Berlin Netflix. I'm glad you're watching it.
It's cautionary and it's really resonant right now.
But I think I'm getting about 83% of it.
Oh, that's much more than I am.
Yeah.
But you do pick up things and you go, wow, that's relevant today. Or
right.
It's just great drama. It's really well
Can
done.
Can I ask
really
what you're not getting? Seriously, I'm just curious.
Well, I'm about halfway through it. There are a lot of episodes, maybe 15 or so.
No, but I think his question is, what points are we having trouble following?
There are a lot of threads out there. And I'm not sure exactly how all, maybe the threads will all come together. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It is harder. The language is harder.
You got to follow. You can't look. You can't multitask. You need to sit and watch this show.
I think now we're
that's the only way I watch shows.
You know, it's really true, though. I think we're used to now checking our phone and looking at things, and you can't do it for a moment because it's in
German.
The show
is called
Babylon Berlin.
Do you guys ever look at TV recaps at places like Vulture.com and other places like that?
To catch up or to stay
abreast? Because you often have very smart people like Maureen Ryan. Our friend Maureen Ryan writes them for, where's she, Variety now?
She's a Variety, I think. Does she still call hers the Watcher?
I don't know what she calls it now, yeah. But she does. She'll do like she'll take a TV series like Mad Men. She did some really good work on, and she'll just like after every episode, like a couple of hours later, there'll be a really long essay about what's going on and analyzing the characters. And it's not. I mean, there's a bunch of them that do that. It's a really useful thing if you're watching one of these series. It's kind of complicated. So
Maureen is terrific.
She is great.
What do you like in?
Oh, what am I liking? I got two things. One, speaking of gun control, there was a podcast called If Then, and they did an interview this week with a guy named Cody Wilson, who is the guy who's sort of behind the 3D printed guns. And it was a fascinating interview because he's a very calm guy. He talks about how his technology, or the technology of being able to assemble guns, you know, without buying them directly, is the end of gun control. And he's perfectly fine with that. And he says, you know, anyone should be able. He feels that it is his right, everybody's right, to be able to make whatever gun they want and own it. And he makes the case, which is frighteningly plausible, which is that all the gun control measures we might even want to pass are irrelevant because you can make them at home now. And very depressing. And they were saying, and the hosts were going, well, what limits do you see? Any limits on this? Should people be able to make bombs in their homes? And he was like, well, maybe not nuclear bombs. It was pretty. That I really recommend listening to that just for a taste of reality.
If Then podcast.
And I was just at the True False Documentary Festival down in Columbia, Missouri, over the weekend, where John, you and I were together a couple years ago, and you didn't go this year. I don't know why, but
I forgot
to avoid me. But they show, you know, back to back, wall to wall documentaries down there, and there's a new one that they show. From HBO called The Price of Everything. And it's about modern art as investment and how the crazy amounts of money people are spending for modern art. And they go to Sotheby's and they talk. And one of the main players in this are Stefan Edlis and his wife, Gail Neeson, who are Chicago philanthropists. And they buy these incredible – and they keep them in their home. So these are artworks that are not in museums, but they're on the walls in their home. And I think they live in the Hancock Center or something like that. And there's one of the pieces you see is like a little pile of lemons on the floor. And this is – some artist has baked a little stack of lemons, and God knows how much Edlis and Neeson have paid for these lemons. But it's a fascinating look at money and art. And they talk to extremely successful artists and ones that are struggling. And it's going to be great. I think it's coming to the Siskel Center. I'll keep an eye on that for you. But I'll put a link to the page about that.
The title of this movie
is called The Price of Everything.
The Price of Everything. How about you, Scott?
I am just finishing up a book called Chasing New Horizons by Alan Stern and David Grinspoon. Full disclosure, Alan's a friend, but he's a principal investigator for the New Horizons mission to Pluto. And this is that story, how the mission came together. I mean, did you know you can buy a rocket? I mean, that's how this works. They give you a bunch of money, and you go out and you buy your rocket.
Well, you can 3D print it.
Yeah, apparently you can 3D print it now. It's a fascinating story. You can pre-order it now. It's coming out, and I think Alan actually is going to be in Chicago in May sometime to promote the book. But it's called Chasing New Horizons, Inside the Epic First Mission to Pluto. And it's wonderful. It's a fun. I was nervous because I thought it'd be very academic, and it's anything but. It's a story that moves along. It has highs and lows.
Yeah.
It begins. The first chapter begins with the. If you remember, 10 days before Closest Encounter, the spaceship decided to turn itself off. And
Closest Encounter to Pluto.
To Pluto, yeah.
Yeah.
It was 10 days out, and all of a sudden the thing just goes.
Oh no!
And they went.
And it laughed at you like Alexa.
How creepy is that? I was talking about Janine about that this morning. Could you imagine 3 a.m. here?
Alexa.
Wah-ha-ha. I think what bothers people the most, it's not that your maybe device is listening to you and commenting on you, but that it's decided to laugh with Hillary Clinton's voice that bothers people.
I know. How weird is that? So, Chasing New Horizons, Inside the Epic First Mission to Pluto, and you by Alan Stern and David Grinspoon, and yeah. You can pre-order it.
My recommendation this week is the movie Call Me By Your Name. It was nominated for Best Picture.
Really?
And you saw it?
Oh, yeah. I voted on it. I'm a SAG member. So are you, right?
Yeah. Well, but you didn't vote in the Oscars. You voted for the SAG After Awards, right?
Yeah.
And you didn't like it so much.
Janine and I did not. My wife and I did not.
Here's why I liked it. What did you not like about it?
A couple of things. The guy who plays the older guy.
Army Archer.
Yes, is too old. It just seems kind of creepy.
Agreed.
And
it's a flaw.
And just a lot of the stuff, and it's the conceit of Hollywood movies all the time, which never resonates with me, which is, I hate you, oh, you're a jerk, oh, you're an ass, oh, blah, blah, blah. But I really care what you think about me. Where the hell did that come from?
You mean the whole tone of the movie you didn't like?
Well, effectively, yeah.
Well, that's okay.
When it rolls over and then it becomes this, you know,
Well, the love story element is not my cup of tea. I was uncomfortable with the age difference, and I'm not a big fan of gay lover movies, right? It's just not my wheelhouse. But if you watch this on a cold February or March day, and it's mud and barren leaves in Chicago, maybe some ice or snow on the ground. It is so warm. It's set in Italy. They're eating outside. You know, it's just so leisurely. They're having this idyllic vacation. The parents are extraordinarily liberal. There's no arguing really going on. Everybody's smoking and drinking wine and riding bicycles and, you know, pursuing their interests or being melancholy. And I wasn't so interested in the storyline, although it's interesting enough, as I just was in going there. We got done with watching the movie, and I don't know if we loved it, but we booked two tickets to Italy right away. We should, because actually we are going to Italy this spring, and it's going to make it that much more attractive. It's one of the nominated movies, and it's called Call Me By Your Name. Okay, fellas, thanks for joining us. Scott Stantis, Eric Zorn. Krista McQuarrie couldn't join us this week. I know she's listening to it and thinking, gee, that was the best podcast I ever heard. And Steve Bertrand. Our engineer is Ben Cortez. Thank you, Benji. And The Mincing Rascals are produced by Elif Garris. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.